Next case is 03-1212, John Andrico versus the City of Cincinnati and Board of Trustees of the Cincinnati Retirement System. Ms. Bissinger.
Good morning, Mr. Chief Justice and members of the court. John Andrico worked for the City of Youngstown for 2.5 years in their Urban Renewal Department back in the mid-60s. The day after he quit working for the City of Youngstown, he came to work for the City of Cincinnati in its Finance Department. He worked for the city for 30 years, and he retired from city service. Now, it's important for you to know that when he worked for the City of Youngstown, he was a member of the Public Employees Retirement System. And when he left the City of Youngstown, he took his contributions out of that system and became a member in the Cincinnati Retirement System. He could have left his contributions in the Public Employees Retirement System and continued in that system as a City of Cincinnati employee. The City Retirement System is a creation of Municipal Code. The City Retirement Board and the system are created by the Charter and the Administrative Code. The trustees are elected and appointed, and their duties are described in the Code and in Chapter 203 of the Cincinnati Municipal Code. The trustees have a fiduciary responsibility to maintain the integrity of the retirement system for current members and those employees who are retired. If you work for the City of Cincinnati, you must belong to one of four systems: the Cincinnati Retirement System, the Public Employees Retirement System, the Police and Fire System, or the Craftsman Retirement System. And again, it's important for you to know that upon coming to the City of Cincinnati, Mr. Andrico elected to leave PERS and become a member of the Cincinnati Retirement System. The retirement system is funded by member contributions and investments made by the Board of Trustees. The employee contributions are 7% of your gross pay, and the financial soundness of the system depends on decisions and ordinances approved and passed by the Retirement Board and City Council.
Counsel, the Court of Appeals, if I understood what they said, indicated that the retirement system really didn't offer any showing as to the harm, financial harm. I think they expressly said, you know, if this is going to cause great financial harm, but to the system, for this gentleman to prevail in his constitutional argument, that would or may be persuasive. But they seem to say Cincinnati didn't make that case.
That's true. I think the record reflects that there was no substantial harm shown as to the retirement system if Mr. Andrico were allowed to bring his 2.5 years of Youngstown service to the Cincinnati retirement system. However, I don't think the standard of review in a rational basis test requires that there be that amount of detail. Courts are very liberal. The Supreme Court of the United States and this court are both very liberal in giving deference to local governments for legislative enactments, particularly where the fiscal integrity of a system is at stake. The assertion that we, the City of Cincinnati, do not want to affect the retirement system, we do not want to put a burden on that system by allowing people to transfer their city service to buy credit, we're not going to pay for that. That in and of itself is a sufficient reason to pass the rational basis test.
Even though for firefighters, the formula was totally different, the law was totally different. There was no concern about the financial stability of the fund with respect to firefighters who transferred their credits.
I think there are two things that are important for you to know in regard to that. The one is that it's fire and police. The fire and police pension, the fire and police, former fire and police members that become members of the Cincinnati retirement system do have a lesser amount that they need to pay for the prior credit. But it's important.
They don't pay anything, do they?
They have to pay their, they have to employ, pay their employee, what their employee contribution would have been, 4% per annum on that, and then 50% of the actuarially determined amount to make the system whole. So they do. If there's uninterrupted service, in essence, if as a firefighter or policeman, you start the next day in a non-sworn position, then you only have to pay the employee amount plus 4% per annum. Now, I think it's important that the provision for fire and police was enacted back in the 60s. This was enacted in 1997. Times have changed. All that the Cincinnati retirement system needs to do is express a rational reason for the 100% contribution that it that it's asking of the non-uniformed employees to contribute for making the system whole for past service.
And what is that reason?
The reason is it's stated throughout the legislative history. The legislative history indicates, I'm reading from
Why aren't you telling us they're in a dangerous profession?
Well, I think that's one thing. I think that's implicit just by virtue of the fact of what they do. They also, and this is another fact that was brought out in trial, Mr. Giles, who was the supervisor of the pension plans for the city of Cincinnati, testified that as a police or fireman, you cannot stay in that system if you become a non-sworn employee. If you are a non-sworn employee from another jurisdiction, you can stay in PERS. You can continue with that. So the implication is because they have to switch systems, they're given a break. They're given a benefit to pay 50% to make the system whole as opposed to 100%. The legislative history indicates...
if I may, if we keep interrupting you, but that's the purpose of oral arguments, so we can get our questions answered.
It's all right.
I guess this rule, with respect to the danger of police and firemen, no one would argue with that, but I guess this rule would apply to someone who, let's say, a security officer in a juvenile detention facility where there are juveniles who have committed felonies, what we would consider to be adult crimes, that person would fall under this provision that the Court of Appeals found to be not constitutional. Is that correct?
If I'm following what you're saying,
what I'm trying to do is give you an example of somebody who is required to pay. Not a fireman or policeman, but another person who falls under this ordinance, who has a very dangerous position.
Well, I have to confess that I don't know exactly the requirements to be a member of the state police or fire system. I don't know if a juvenile detention officer would.
Let's assume they're not
qualify.
In that. Let's assume that somebody is not in the state the police and firemen's fund.
Then you would be right. That person would have to
regardless of how dangerous their work may have been.
That would be correct. That would be correct. The legislative history is replete with evidence that the primary concern was the financial integrity of the system. In the ordinance recommended in the Director of Finance's correspondence with mayor and members of council on November the 26, 1997, suggesting the ordinance, he says, this authorization will not increase cost to the retirement system. In the actual ordinance itself that was passed later in 1997, the preamble says that the purpose of the provision is to provide for the purchase by persons who become city employees in positions covered by the City of Cincinnati retirement system of service credit for time served either in other retirement systems in the state of Ohio provided for in Chapter 145 of the Ohio Revised Code or for time previously served as an employee of the City of Cincinnati. The ordinance goes on to say it shall require the employee to reimburse the retirement system for all costs that the system will incur in granting the purchase of such prior service credit, including interest and any amount determined to be necessary to fund the pension payable on account of the person's period of service. Now, Mr. McCarthy will tell you that he believes there wasn't sufficient data available to support this ordinance or this 100% payment. But if you'll look at City's Exhibit Number 14, there was a committee empowered by City Council to study the purchase of prior service credit. And their findings say that the purchase shall require this employee to make City of Cincinnati Retirement System whole based on the study performed by the system's actuary. And that three of the reasons for the 100% contribution are that it's cost effective, the purchase of retirement service credit will not have a financial impact on the city or the retirement system since the employee will be responsible for making the system whole. The city could receive financial benefits by having the ability to downsize faster without layoffs. Another reason stated by the committee was recruiting of employees. If the city could offer the availability to purchase prior service credit to prospective employees who were former city employees or members of PERS, the pool of applicants would increase. Finally, the committee indicates that because the workforce is so mobile, this will decrease the mobility of the workforce if you offer this benefit. In exhibit number 15 in the trial court, there's a motion to purchase the service credit that was made, and attached to that motion are the reasons that I've stated to you. And in addition, there's a letter from the actuary that indicates what is contemplated is to allow employees to purchase additional service that is related to time worked with other employers who did not participate in the plan. The employee must pay for the entire cost of additional benefits. In this case, the employee pays the total cost.
Well, that seems to be the essence of the case. Mr. Andrico claims that his cost is something in the area of $59,000, whereas the police or fire participants' cost was in the range of $3,500 for the same period. And it's the desperate treatment that is the crux of the issue for me.
There's not an entitlement to purchase prior service credit.
Is there any evidence that if others were permitted to purchase at the 50% rate, that the fund would be in financial ruin?
There is no evidence of that. But I don't think there needs to be evidence of that, because this isn't a fundamental right or a suspect classification, so you look at this as a rational basis test. And there are a number of cases that we've listed in our brief that are Supreme Court cases from the United States, where the court says a legislative classification must be upheld against an equal protection challenge if there's any reasonable, conceivable state of facts that could provide a rational basis for the classification.
So how do you rationalize the difference between $59,000 and $3,500 for the same service in a fund operated by one retirement system?
Because at the time this ordinance was passed in 1997, the city of Cincinnati made the determination that it didn't want to encumber the retirement system anymore. That's the reason.
So basically you're saying the rational basis, the encumbrance without a showing of economic hardship on the system is sufficient in your mind.
That's what I believe the trial court
and
said.
And then the disparate treatment is further given a rational basis based on the dangerousness of the job and the fact that police and fire are forced to be in that retirement system as opposed to any other option available to them.
That's what the record would reflect.
Okay, and the Mr. Andrico could only be in Cincinnati, or did he have the option of continuing in PERS?
He had the option to continue in PERS. I think it's also important for you to know that I believe that there's no entitlement to purchase prior service credit. There is an entitlement to participate in a retirement system. This purchase of service credit is purely a matter of local concern. The fiduciary responsibility that the Board of Trustees has is to maintain the integrity of that fund. And if there's any basis upon which they can justify the difference, that should pass judicial scrutiny. I'd like to reserve the remaining time, please.
Thank you, Ms. Bissinger.
Thank you.
Mr. McCarthy.
Mr. Chief Justice, members of the court, let me begin by making sure we understand what we're talking about here. We're not talking about police officers or firefighters engaged in dangerous work buying service credit in the Cincinnati Retirement Fund. We are talking about non-uniformed employees of the city of Cincinnati working in the finance department, working in the city manager's office, working even in the city solicitor's office, purchasing credit in the Cincinnati retirement system. What we're talking about is the availability of past service credit in a statewide, state-sponsored retirement system. Prior to 1997, only those non-uniformed employees of the city of Cincinnati who had service in the police and fire fund were entitled to purchase service credit in the Cincinnati retirement system. When 1997 came along, the city made service credit available for time served in a similar, and I emphasize similar, it has been stipulated in the record that PERS and the state police and fire fund are identical. They operate on the same principles. They are identical for purposes of this record. When that act was passed, that ordinance was passed, you now had created two classes of non-uniformed employees entitled to purchase credit in the Cincinnati retirement system for time served in a statewide, state-sponsored system. One class could purchase that credit at a discount. Another class had to pay 100%. One class could purchase that credit based upon an actuarial calculation using reasonable actuarial assumptions. The second class pays the cost based on actuarial assumptions intended to deter the purchase of the credit. The first class gets the full benefit of the credit. The second class gets a diluted benefit. To demonstrate the arbitrariness of the city's act, Mr. Andreyko has received multiple quotes for the exact same credit for the exact same time. And these are stipulated facts, not hypotheticals.
Does the record reflect the advantage that your client had by joining the Cincinnati system and leaving the public employees retirement system? Is that in the record?
Excuse me, Your Honor. The record reflects that when he joined the city of Cincinnati, he was not told he had any options. He was told that there is a separate Cincinnati retirement system and that this is your option. This is what you as a non-uniform employee must join. That's what the record reflects. And I want to emphasize, whether we look at this from the perspective of we're trying to preserve the integrity of the system, or whether we're looking at it, we're trying to give a benefit to former police officers because of their service. The stipulated facts in this record demonstrate that these two systems are identical and they operate identically. Participation in either state system presents no unique or different liability to the Cincinnati retirement system. The only cost difference between an employee with prior service in police and fire and an employee in PRS is the artificial formula drafted by the city of Cincinnati, and that is a stipulated fact. For purposes of an actuarial calculation, looking at who these potential beneficiaries are, the stipulated fact in this record is that the only cost difference is an artificial formula created by the city of Cincinnati. There is no financial basis for this cost difference. That's a stipulated fact. There is no actuarial difference in the cost of the service credits. That is a stipulated fact.
Well, Ms. Bissinger argues that the rational basis for the difference here is the likely encumbrance, or the encumbrance on the fund of a number of non-uniformed or persons who were not firefighters or police officers, why is that not a rational basis? They're attempting to preserve the integrity of the financial integrity of the fund.
Mr. Chief Justice, I don't disagree that a rational basis could be preserving the integrity of the fund. However, this court, as well as the United States Supreme Court, has said where that rational basis is stated, where there's no rational basis on which the legislature could conclude that way, then that rational basis goes away. And based upon the stipulated record in this case, and I emphasize in this case, the stipulated record is that there is no rational basis for the legislature to make such a conclusion. The service credits from PERS or from police present no different or unique potential liability. That's a stipulated fact. The fact is that the cost, the actuarial calculations performed in this case, simply using the same actuarial assumptions, in other words, take this, a man of the same age, same service length, every single actuarial assumption that you want to make, and you plug it into the system, you will get different costs. The point is there is no actuarially founded basis for this legislature to have concluded that this potential credit created any threat to the Cincinnati retirement system. Those are the stipulated facts in this record.
But the disparate treatment arises from the dangerousness of the police and fire capacity in performing those duties, as opposed to the less danger in working in a fiscal office.
With all due respect, Your Honor, again, let me go back.
Isn't that the explanation offered by the city?
That's right. But remember, even in this record, that can't be substantiated. Let me explain. Remember, we're not talking about police officers or firefighters. We're talking about non-uniformed employees of the city of Cincinnati purchasing credit. In other words, when you're police and fire, you're not in the Cincinnati retirement system.
I understand that. But your complaint is that there's desperate treatment between the police and fire system
correct. And
the Cincinnati system.
Okay. Now let me get to that point. All right. I just want to make sure you understood that we're talking about...
Well, I'm there.
Okay. Now, with that fact, let me take you to the next step. Then the question becomes, is there an actuarial basis for this legislative body, City of Cincinnati Board of Trustees, to conclude, all right, a police officer having had engaged in such behavior, a firefighter having had engaged in such behavior, there's a different actuarial basis to conclude that that person gets the benefit at a different cost. Shorter lifespan, health risks associated with fighting fires, whatever you want to call it, all right? The fact of the matter is, on the stipulated record in this case, there's no actuarially founded conclusion that will support that. The city stipulated that the calculation of the benefits for police and fire and for PERS are identical on an actuarial basis. The only difference is the formula that the city itself created. What I'm suggesting to you, sir, is that there is an artificial basis and there is no foundation in the record, and Mr. Andreyko has presented that unstipulated evidence, and as a result, this legislative assumption doesn't withstand scrutiny.
Counselor, is there any evidence in the record that there is a significant number of police or fire pensioners, or pension participants, I should say, that have had to do this conversion once they became members of the Cincinnati retirement system? Is there any?
No.
So, and we're only talking about people who have left the uniformed service, then became employees of the city in some capacity, and needed to, if they didn't have sufficient if they couldn't maintain a dual retirement system, which, based on their longevity in their police or fire, they may very well be recipients of pensions from that service and start anew, and then we don't even have the issue. But this is only if they want to transfer their police and fire to the Cincinnati system.
Correct.
So it seems to me, and maybe you can explain why, there's such a scarce amount of information. You say there is no record. There is no information in the record. Is it because it does not exist? It is not, would not substantiate the rational basis, or it just wasn't put in?
Well, let me answer the question in this way. Mr. Andreyko approached it this way. We called Mr. Keith Giles as a witness because he provided the administrative support and worked closely with the actuary as well as with the Board of Trustees. And we called him specifically to address that very question which you raised. How many people, have you done any studies to see how many people fit in this category? Answer, no. Have you done any studies to figure out what type of risk this new credit presents to the Cincinnati retirement system? Answer, no. So, Your Honor, when you look for it in the record, the reason of the sparseness of it is that the city itself doesn't know. And if the city doesn't know, based upon the records that it is available to it, knowing who purchased, and because Mr. Giles testified, I'm responsible for the administration of who purchases service credits and who doesn't. If he doesn't know, there's no way that you can tell. And that goes to the point of demonstrating the absence of any legitimate basis upon which this legislative body, this classification, could have been created.
Well, do you know whether there was that information known at the time the legislation was created? Any evidence as to that to support the rational basis?
Thank you for bringing that up, because that's a point I want to make about what the legislative history shows. Actually, if you look at the legislation, there are two points. Number one, this purchase of service credit that was passed in 1965, you look at it, it's not former police officers and firefighters. There you had police officers and firefighters who could switch back and forth. Okay, so there was nothing found at that time. Secondly, when we talk about a new legislation that allowed for the, quote, uninterrupted service credit mm-hmm. being made available, the stipulated facts in the record are that legislation was passed for one purpose and one purpose only: to allow Henry Sandman to become the safety director for the city of Cincinnati.
To what? I didn't hear
to
you.
To allow Henry Sandman to become the safety director of the city of Cincinnati. That's a stipulated fact. The stipulated facts, and this is the point I think the Court of Appeals was going to, the stipulated facts in this record do not support the conclusions that the city is articulating. In effect, the Court of Appeals said to the city, you stipulated your case away. That's what happened here. And that is what has happened here. There is no rational basis for the disparate, the two classes. But more importantly, talk in any way you want, whether you want to talk in terms of police and fire, or former employees. Here's the fact. Mr. Andreyko has to buy his credit based on an actuarial assumption that it's going to deter his purchase, that it's based on actuarial assumptions not used for anyone else, that he doesn't get the full benefit of the credit, and finally, he has had multiple quotes time and time again. And those facts, that disparate treatment of Mr. Andreyko, demonstrates that there is a fundamental denial of equal protection in this case, and we would ask you to affirm the Court of Appeals.
So, Counselor,
well, he hasn't lost anything. He's purchased exactly what he wanted. They told him the cost of his 2.5 years of service, and he opted to do it, right?
No, he did not opt to do it.
My point is, they only charged him what the cost of his service was. They didn't charge him something beyond that.
Oh, no.
They just didn't give him the reduced rate that others got.
No. My point is that they charged him a rate based on an actuarial assumption well beyond what the cost would have been. They based it on an actuarial assumption intended to deter him from purchasing it. This is not an actuarial calculation that was intended to say, okay, you want to buy it, here's how much it costs.
All right, thank you.
That's
isn't that
the difference.
Isn't that the nub of your argument is that the ordinance was designed to discourage non-uniform persons from participating in under the old ordinance, firefighters and police officers or policemen were encouraged to participate.
Well, that is certainly one of the significant facts for me, that it is not just a matter of, is there a difference here that could have some actuarial explanation? What the city has stipulated that they did was they set the price in a way to deter people from buying it, and they used actuarial assumptions in this calculation different than they used in any other service credit. And that's the fundamental denial here. They made benefits available and then turned around and effectively took them away.
You've used your time, Mr. McCarthy.
Thank you.
Thank you. Ms. Bissinger, you saved a little over a minute of your time.
Ms. Bissinger, would you address, please, for me whether or not the city has charged Mr. Andreyko at a rate beyond what his purchase of service would have been actuarially?
Mr. Andreyko chose not to purchase the 2.5 years of service credit.
I understand that. That's not my question. My question is, was the rate quoted to him to purchase the 2.5 years in excess of what actuarially the 2.5 years would have cost?
No. The three different calculations that Mr. McCarthy said are in the record were based on information given by our supervisor of pensions to the actuary to do the calculations. Some of the on the first two calculations, I believe the information was incorrect. So the calculations were incorrect. I think on the third letter, the underlying data that Mr. Giles gave the actuary was the correct data. It was the first two were just errors on the part of Mr. Giles and the actuary in interpreting the correct service credit.
And it was based on purchasing 100% of the service credit, right? With no
yes.
discount.
Yes.
Okay.
That's
Counselor,
true.
When the actuarials are figuring out the cost to a non-uniform employee for these, are they adding into that mix the system's burden of allowing uniform employees this reduction? In other words, is Mr. Andreyko's cost inflated in proportion to the discount that is given to uniform employees, former uniform, current employees with the Cincinnati retirement system?
I have to admit I'm not an actuarial expert, but I do know that it has the police and fire have nothing to do with the determination for him. It is solely a determination for him to make the system whole for him, as if he had been in the system all along.
Which can't help but have a factor built in to reflect the discount given to the uniform employees that are now participants that purchase their service.
There's nothing in the record to reflect that. There's no testimony, there aren't any stipulations, so I don't know that that's the case.
Okay. All right, thank you.
You've used your time. Thank you.
Thank you.
Case is submitted, you'll be advised of our opinion. We'll take a brief recess.